Welcome to another edition of Green is Good. We're so excited to have with us today Charlie Kawasaki. He's the CEO and co-founder of Bettery. Welcome to Green is Good, Charlie.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Charlie, before we get into talking about your great company, Bettery, can you please share the Charlie Kawasaki story? How did you even get here as the co-founder and the CEO of this great company? What was your journey leading up to this point?
Well, I've had a lifelong passion for developing new and innovative solutions to help people solve problems that really cause them a great deal of hassle and concern. I have about 35 years of experience in the high-tech industry, developing both hardware and software products in a variety of startups. And my passion has always been in developing really cool, innovative products.
Cool. Well, speaking of cool, innovative products, can you speak a little bit about, tell me about your company and what your company does? And for our listeners out there that want to follow along, I'm on your beautiful and really well-done website right now. It's www.bettery, BETTERY, INC.com. Tell us about Bettery. What is it and what solution were you providing? What void in the marketplace did you see?
Well, Bettery has developed the nation's first kiosks for the responsible use and purchase of reusable batteries that really make it easy for consumers to step up to a sustainable battery product and make it really easy for them to use.
Awesome. And so explain how it works and what's the real mission of Bettery? Like what is the mission that everyone at the company knows?
Well, the way it works is it's pretty easy. It's kind of like a red box kiosk, if you're familiar with renting DVDs.
Yeah.
And instead of DVDs, it's for household batteries, like AA and AAA batteries. And the way you use it is you just walk up to the battery swap station at a convenient retailer, and you can choose AA or AAA batteries to take home and use them just like you normally would. But instead of throwing them away in the trash when you're done, you take them back to the battery swap station, stick them in, and you exchange them for freshly charged batteries. And the reason why we did this was a couple things. One is to help people save money on batteries, but also we had a big pile of batteries piling up at home in a Ziploc bag labeled bad and didn't know what to do with them. And we wanted to find an easier way to step up to a reusable product and not have to drive around town looking for a place to recycle our batteries.
So, okay, you're the co-founder. Who else co-founded with you? When you say we came up with this idea, which is your aha moment, which is just so perfect, for entrepreneurs like you who are always trying to come up with new solutions. Who is the other founders with you?
So my co-founder is Bill Coleman out of San Jose, and he's also had a lifelong passion for sustainable products. He and I have worked together on and off over the last 25 years in building different innovative technology products. And so it was a great way for us to work together more on this new idea.
And I'm on your website now, like I've just shared with our listeners. For our listeners out there, again, it's BetteryInc.com, BETTERY INC.com. First of all, the machine itself looks gorgeous. You have a great video on the landing page that shows how it works and everything. Where is this machine today? Like, is it in a lot of stores? Is it in a couple of test stores? How widespread is your machine getting out there?
We have battery swap stations around the Pacific Northwest right now at both Safeway and Whole Foods Markets locations.
Wow.
We also have them at the Portland State University Student Union Building. And we're in discussions with additional national retailers, as well as large corporate campuses who are looking to put these swap stations in place for their employees.
This is so great. So now let's step back and talk about the problem, because for our listeners out there, batteries, just like electronic waste, which are really, they're part of the electronic waste stream in many ways, have a lot of environmental problems with them when they come to their end of their usable life. Can you share the bad environmental problem that's caused by batteries if they're disposed of inappropriately and they're not put into your ingenious machine?
Oh, certainly. I was pretty surprised when I discovered just how many batteries we use in the U.S. each year. There's about 2.5 billion of the single-use batteries that end up in the U.S. landfills every year.
Oh.
And in addition to the hazards related to disposing of them properly in our landfills, they also have a big environmental impact in just the making and the transporting of them in terms of their carbon footprint for a single-use product. You can sort of think of it like a foam cup. You know, you do all the manufacturing and the transport, and then you use it once and throw it away. So we're pleased that we have support from recycling experts like King County's Solid Waste Division, who is helping us get the word out, educating the public about getting these batteries out of the landfills. And in addition to that, there's a huge amount of raw material and manufacturing impact of batteries that are used. And what we do is we get to reuse our batteries up to 500 times. So you take that environmental impact and you get to divide it by 500 for each use of our batteries.
Wow. That is just... So let's step back here. First of all, when did you... I want to go back in time a little bit, Charlie. When did you come up with this concept?
So in about 2010, and I have a 13-year-old daughter who a few years ago, we were using a lot of batteries in our house. You know, she would read books under her covers at night, fall asleep, and I'd get up in the morning and go, okay, there's $4 down the drain and a bunch of batteries I have to throw out. And at the same time, her babysitter introduced us to Redbox at home.
Mm.
And looking at this Ziploc bag of batteries labeled bad, and I put two and two together and came up with this idea that we could use the technology expertise of me and my partner Bill and build a red box like solution that could solve these problems.
That is just so incredible. And when you were doing it and looking at the marketplace, had you ever considered yourself during, you know, you have a very storied career, unbelievably successful historically, but did you ever consider yourself a greenie or a tree hugger prior to creating this environmental solution that was desperately needed?
You know, I've always had a passion for environmental, reducing our country's environmental impact. I've been involved in things like energy efficient buildings.
Hmm.
And interestingly, I've been a lifelong battery enthusiast.
Oh.
I've tried every new kind of battery that's come out on the market.
Right.
And one of the things that really made this business go was the invention of a new chemistry of rechargeable batteries that came out a few years ago that really made this type of battery a product that people could use, have a good experience with, and could deliver good value to consumers.
Got it. And when you were writing your business plan with Bill, what did the competition look like and what does it look like today?
Well, we don't have any competition for reusable swap stations in the market today. So we really have a first mover advantage that we're really pleased to have.
Wow. And when you went out and raised money for this, people were excited, people were not excited. What was that experience like? Because we have so many entrepreneurs that listen to this show. It's always great to share the entrepreneurial journey with also the amazing solution you've created.
You know, we've received great enthusiasm about this business, in part because it's a dual mission business.
Mm.
We're out to build a great business and build a company the size and stature of the Redbox business. But we also have a sustainability mission, and there's a large group of enthusiasts and investors in the country that really get excited about being able to have an impact on the environment while making it a great business.
So the combination of profit and higher purpose is sort of the 1-2 punch nowadays, huh?
It certainly is.
Yeah. So you start in 2010. We're now finishing, coming to what, three and a half years of you running this company and growing it. Are you where you want to be right now? And what is it looking like? What was the first pitch like when you went into a Whole Foods or to a Safeway? What was their response when you showed this to them?
They really liked it because they had a lot of customers looking for battery recycling, looking for ways to use batteries in a more sustainable method. So we've had a great deal of interest from the retailers and the grocery stores in the nation. As a matter of fact, we're quite a bit further ahead with that than we expected at this point.
That is great. And how about the shoppers? When you gauge the user's experience, how's that been from what you predicted in the beginning when you were developing the machine, and how have you evolved your invention for the consumer experience?
So it's exactly as we expected, and consumers really thank us. They're like, hey, this is great. This is a great idea. I was looking for a way to do something different than the bag of batteries that I have at home. So we get a lot of consumers that say, hey, thank you so much for doing this. This is great. And the one thing that was new and interesting for us that we didn't expect is that we also have a great deal of interest in recycling the alkaline batteries that people have at home already. So you can also take your old alkaline batteries and put them on our machine and we recycle them responsibly.
Wow. And so, well, you know, now that you're in the Pacific Northwest and on the western part of the United States, what do you see, you know, the next months and years ahead in terms of your machine getting out there even more? What does it look like to you?
Well, our goal is definitely to be as convenient as a red box, and that means being within a very short distance from your home to make it convenient. And to do that, we need to be nationwide. And so it's our goal to have a national rollout in that same kind of kiosk density as you might see in a Redbox or a Coinstar.
And right now, how many employees do you have?
We have five right now. So we've done this on a very slim budget.
Wow.
And we're really pleased with how much we've accomplished so far.
A lot you've accomplished with five people. That's what it looks like to me, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a great team.
So now, is this machine also applicable for other countries? Are you going to take this international?
You know, there's, as a small company, we certainly have our sights on that, and there are plenty of countries overseas that have interest in this. But you know, we're taking things one step at a time.
How about when it comes to the battery companies? When you went in, or when they've seen this, how's been your discussions going with the battery companies themselves? Are they thrilled about this? Are they really intrigued by this, by your new invention?
So this is a new offering that we haven't had a whole lot of discussions with the major brands that you might be familiar with.
Right.
The companies that make our reusable technology, of course, are very excited about it.
So your daughter, the one who is the 13-year-old back then, who was part of the inspiration for the machine, what does she think about what you're doing?
Oh, she loves it. You know, our household is now the battery household, and she's a big enthusiast.
She's got the cool dad now. My dad's in the whole green revolution. My dad's part of the whole sustainability revolution. He's the cool dad.
Oh, that's true, but at 13, you can imagine that dads can only be so cool.
I got you on that one. So for our listeners out there who just joined us, we've got Charlie Kawasaki. He's the CEO and co-founder of Battery, and Battery is a battery recycling kiosk that you could find in local grocery stores in the Pacific Northwest now, coming to a store near you eventually. But to go learn more about it, it's www.betterye.com. You know, Charlie, we've got about 5 minutes left, and part of the show is always to is not only to explain the great things that our wonderful guests have created or invented or done, but it's also to inspire the next generation behind us to follow suit and to even do more with what we're passing on to them. Share a little bit about your experience. You are, as I said earlier, you have a storied history of success and lots of companies and that you've been involved with and led and done really well with. Share some of the thoughts that you have for the next generation behind us who want to get and be part of the sustainability revolution, or who want to be the next Charlie Kawasaki and invent something where there's a great need.
Well, the thing that really drives me is, in addition to solving problems that people have and getting the kinds of consumer responses that we're getting, which, you know, make me wake up in the morning every day charged up to go and continue to build the business and grow the business and make things available nationwide, is that because it does have the environmental benefit, it's doubly motivating and doubly fun to get up in the morning and think, hey, I'm doing something that I really believe in. I'm doing something that's important, that can make an impact. And if you're going to put your 24/7 into it and put your real life and all of your effort into something, it's really important to have that kind of motivation and that kind of belief that what you're doing can really make an impact.
Do you feel that you'll never go back? This is it in terms of your life mission. There's no more ever working for a company anymore. You're only going to work for companies that you've created and are involved with?
Oh, well, that's certainly the goal. And I'm having a great time both inventing things and working with a great team. So I certainly don't have any interest in doing anything else.
Is raising money hard nowadays if you're a young entrepreneur with another great idea like you're amazing, really, truly, and I'm just in awe of this whole Bettery concept you've created and how it's working so well. Is it hard to raise money to create the prototypes and to get some traction?
It certainly is. As a company, picked off a space that had quite a bit of risk, everything from the product development risk to getting interest from national retailers to building a supply chain. All of those pieces are quite intensive. And these days, investors, they want to see businesses with a lowest possible risk profile. So this was definitely a big challenge for us, and fundraising certainly has been very time consuming.
It's so interesting, Charlie. Years ago, you and Bill would have to be in a garage together. Now he gets to be in San Jose, you get to be in Portland, and you still get to be co-founders and partners of a very ingenious and important new product. So you don't have to be anymore. Geography isn't critical to the success of a venture. Is that true?
You know, we definitely opted for finding people on our team that had the best experience and the most relevant experience in the industry, and at the sacrifice of geographic convenience. But with today's technologies, online video teleconferencing and things like that, and file sharing, we've certainly been able to be very effective with our team spread all over the country, actually. And, so that's worked really well for us. There are some times when we get together in person as well, though.
Interesting. And for our, you know, and again, we're down to the last minute and a half or so, but for our next generation, you know, what's your thoughts now? You know, the whole thought process around education has changed so much, Charlie. With your daughter, college important, grad school important, or is it more important real life experience? What do you share with your own children? What do you share with the youth of America and the youth of the world right now?
Education is absolutely paramount today. It's a very competitive marketplace for people to find really great jobs. And while real world experience is extremely important, I don't envy kids coming through onto the job market today and having to go out and find great employment. So I would definitely still very much focus on the educational fundamentals. The experience I've had working with the university systems is many of them have become very, very cognizant of equipping their students with real-world experience as they come through the university systems. So it's kind of the best of both.
Got it. You know, and when you're back on Green is Good a year from now, where's Bettery going to be? We're down to the last 30 seconds.
Oh, we're going to be all over the place with lots of yachts. In many cities across the country.
I love it. I love the confidence, and we wish you all the best. Charlie Kawasaki, you are a visionary sustainability leader and truly living proof that green is good. Welcome back to Green is Good, and I'm so honored to have my friend, the co-founder of Peace Food Cafe, Peter Liu. He's on with us today. Welcome to Green is Good, Peter.
Hey, John, how are you?
We are great today, Peter. And this is such a special day for me personally because you are so important to my family's life here in New York City. We love your food. We love your restaurant. We love you and your partner, Eric. And we're just so thankful that you're here serving the New York metropolitan area and sharing the good word of veganism and plant food-based diets. And so thank you for being on the show to share your story today.
Well, we love to share our story, and we love you as our customers.
So. Peter, share a little bit about you and Eric and how, you know, where you've come from, how you, you know, where you were on your journey historically, what you've done before leading up to this great restaurant chain you've built here in Manhattan, and then how you got to where you are today.
Okay, so, well, we are both from Hong Kong, and, you know, we've lived here in New York since, you know, the early 80s, so it's like pushing, you know, or maybe even over 30 years now.
Wow.
So we've been partners for, like, you know, 20 years, and Eric, you know, used to be an antique dealer for 20 years.
Yeah.
And he did have a degree on hospitality management, which was back in, you know, the 80s when he was going to college. And me, I am an interior design, you know, I have been in that profession for over 20 years. And, you know, and we kind of like stumble into this as to open Peace Food in 2008, kind of like, you know, an accidental, but, you know, purposefully.
Yeah.
You know, we did that because if you remember the 2008, you know, market crash.
Yes.
You know, his antique business was dwindling down, and, you know, and he finally closed shop, and he spent a lot of time thinking, like, what we should do, you know, in the next chapter of our life, and in the way that, you know, we thought, and, you know, at the time that we already became vegan, Eric became a vegetarian probably, you know, a little before I did, and I soon became a vegetarian afterwards, like in 2001. And then we've been like vegetarian for like probably like 6-7 years, and then, you know, we turned vegan because, you know, we kind of like learned about the milk industry, how bad it was, and, you know, how the animals were treated.
Right.
And eventually, you know, they will be put to death as well, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that doesn't make any difference if you're eating meat or, you know, you're eating an egg or milk. I mean, actually, the farm animals that, you know, are in the milk industry, they probably go through a lot more, you know, sufferings, you know, because of the they have to produce milk or they have to produce eggs, you know, and all that, you know, and eventually they still have to be slaughtered and all that. So
who brought you that information? Did you read a book? Was it like now these famous books like The China Study and Forks Over Knives, or did you, was this some friends that shared this information with you?
No, actually, I stumble into a few podcasts, you know, these podcasters, you know, also do this wonderful work of, you know, spreading, you know, the truth about veganism. And, you know, and one of my heroes was Colleen Patrick Goudreau, who owns like a Compassionate Cooks .com, you know, who has been podcasting for almost 5 years.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of like learned that, you know, from her podcast, and I said to Eric, I said, you know, I mean, being vegetarian is just not quite enough, you know.
Right.
It's, you know, we have to live up, you know, to the truth. And we kind of turned vegan, not we kind of turned vegan, we decided to turn vegan, like, you know, and just swear off all the dairy products by 2007. So at the time of like 2008, after he closed shop, so back to the story.
Sure.
You know, we thought that, you know, doing a vegan restaurant is true to ourselves.
Right.
And it will sort of like spread the message about veganism to people. So we looked around in New York City. I mean, it was like our first restaurant. We never had a restaurant before.
Wow.
I mean, ever. It was a brand new project. And, you know, We looked and looked and looked, and it was not a very easy thing to do because first is the market was not really, you know, it was just after the 2008, you know, bubble burst, you know, in the stock market and all that. So we looked around, and it wasn't easy because first of all, it was our first business. Second of all, you know, the landlord, when they hear that you're opening a vegan restaurant, said, you know, you probably won't be making much money, and, you know, why am I, you know, giving you the lease? So anyway, it took us like a long time to find a space, and, you know, we found the space which we have our first restaurant is on Amsterdam Avenue, you know, on the Upper West Side.
Right.
And then it took probably another 6 months to put the restaurant together with very little money. And we just started from there. And Eric was like really, you know, he was like the soul of the restaurant at the time because I was still having my interior design job. I didn't resign until we opened up the second restaurant.
Ah. Yeah. So you opened up the restaurant, and what in back in 2009, what was the response like for two new restaurateurs on this journey? Still, at the beginning of this whole vegan revolution, what was the response like up for your neighborhood and for the surrounding area?
It was great. I mean, it was a very slow start. I mean, it took at least a year to kind of like get out of the red. I mean, on the business.
Sure.
So we just kind of like, you know, put our hearts into it, especially Eric, because he was really running the restaurant at the time.
Right.
And he would do everything, you know, from buying the stuff, from, you know, hiring the people, working in the kitchen, ran into the kitchen and cooked something or make the soup in the morning. I mean, he was like tireless, you know, basically for the first year. And I just kind of supported him, you know, on the side, you know, I was doing all the bookworks and all the administrative work and all.
You're humble. A partnership is a partnership, and everybody's doing an important role. You're very humble. So is Eric, by the way. And for our listeners out there, we're so honored to have today with us the co-founder of Peace Food Cafe, Peter Lewin, to learn more about his amazing and delicious restaurant and the great food that they serve. Go to www.peacefoodcafe.com. How did you come up with the name? How did you and Eric come up with the name?
Oh, that was great. Oh, well, you know, we had like this farm sanctuary, Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary,
yep,
in Woodstock.
Sure.
And they always have this like kind of a slogan on the T-shirt that,
yeah,
peace begins on your plate.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
So we kind of like, wow, that sounds really true, you know. I mean, when you think about it, you know, when people are saying, you know, we want peace, but we still keep eating all this meat. And
you're right.
So, you know, I mean, not in the sense of like, you know, just to harm the animal, but, you know, imagine that, you know, all the animals like going through this like state of fear when they are being slaughtered, and the kind of energy that was like left on the piece of meat that somebody's going to be eating, it's not a very good thing, you know. That kind of like will kind of like affect your whole well-being, I think, you know, is
right,
if you know what I'm trying to say.
Sure. Sure.
So we think that peace begins with your plate. It's a really good message. So we kind of like pair like peace and food together. Peace, food should be peaceful. So, you know, peace food. And then we kind of like combine it together. We think that it should be one word instead of like two. So,
right,
you know, it's, you know, food should be peaceful. So
love it.
Yeah,
I love it, and that's a beautiful statement. Peace begins on your plate. I never even heard that before. That's
right.
So
yeah.
That is just wonderful. And for our listeners out there, I'm on Peter's website right now. Like I said earlier, the website is www.peacefoodcafe.com. My family goes to Peter's restaurant and Eric's restaurant all the time. He has now two restaurants, and we'll talk about that in a little while. But for people who think veganism is just for granola eating, kale eating, hippies. This is the furthest thing from the truth. Peter and Eric have created food that is so mainstream and so delicious that everybody in the there's always a line out the door, and there's a bakery, and the baked goods are every person I've ever brought to your restaurant loves everything they've put in their mouth, and they just can't even tell the difference between your baked goods and any mainstream baked goods in terms of the sugar and the fats that are in typical baked goods. Your cakes, cookies, pies, and scones are world class.
Yeah, I have to thank you. I mean, I have to thank all the people that who has worked with Peace Foods, especially this bakery, the bakery chefs that we have, and they are all vegan, and they create these wonderful recipes. They probably veganize all the most of the memorable like desserts that you know. Or pastries that we have, and the kind of ingredients that we use are very good ingredients, and they're not like processed sugar or anything. I mean, we use very natural ingredients such as maple syrup and agave and coconut meat, and that type of thing. And also on the food end, Eric is actually the creator of the menu. Actually created all the menu based on the type of food that both of us liked. And so it kind of a very diversified type of menu. It's something that that people can come in any time of the day and they can, find something that they can, have. It doesn't really matter what time of the day it is. So we want the place to be kind of home-like, that you can kind of just walk into Peace Food and feel like that you're in somebody's home or in somebody's kitchen, and then you can just open the refrigerator and just grab anything that you want, that type of a feeling.
Yeah. Well, you've succeeded, because I know the first time I ever walked into Peace Food was after the hurricane last year hit, and you were the first and only restaurant open literally in New York that we walked the streets and drove the streets, and we came into the first place that, and it was just like being home. It was like, everyone was happy. Your staff was so loving. Of course, Eric greeted everybody as always, and the food was amazing.
Yes, I remember.
Right?
Hurricane Sandy, and we were slammed the whole week because, downtown, they had an electrical, problem that, I think, anything below 14th Street was just completely, out of electricity for like a week or something. So I think the migration of all the downtown people and, and a lot of other neighborhood people, really made our restaurant, very successful that week. We were slammed from, when we opened until, the end of the night. I think we closed for one day, and then Eric said, we have to open. There's people that out there that's probably looking for food and all that.
It's true. And you guys did, and it was just the best experience. And let's talk a little bit about, Peter, the ethical, health, and environmental issues that surround and are benefited from veganism. Can you share with the listeners your view on these issues?
Oh, yeah, sure. First of all, let's talk about the environmental issues that, we do a lot of things these days, we recycle, we conserve on the fuel and the water, and improve on, transportation and all that, but, it is really not quite enough. But we've just forgot something that, that is so simple to do, is to actually just to choose a vegan diet, which, basically, the vegan diet is something that can help us, just because of, like, the livestock industry creates a lot of, like, waste and
the whole meat industry and all those industries create all sorts of carbon footprint.
They actually created a lot of the waste. It's like 18% of the methane that,
wow,
that came out. That is basically, you know, they were calculated in the equivalence of the of carbon dioxide.
Wow.
So and also the waste management that will. I mean, there's poor waste management, and the amount of like manure that, you know, all these farm animal, you know, excrete, it's far beyond, you know, our imagination.
Wow.
And it leaks into our bodies of water and land.
Oh.
And also, you know, it is very, very inefficient to grow crops, you know, to feed the farm animal, and then in turn that people will eat the meat of the farm animal. I mean, it is not just a very sustainable way to live. So by choosing a vegan diet, then we can skip all this, and then the crops that, you know, that grow can feed the hungry. And then, you know, we don't have to we don't have to have so much land that are being deforested, you know, just for additional, like, more animal grazing and all that. All in all, it's just very good for the environment.
And since 2009, have you seen a shift in consciousness in terms of both society and even just the local community that you serve? Are the lines getting longer, or is there a more diverse crowd coming into your restaurants?
I think people are starting to open up about veganism.
Yep.
I mean, first of all, I must say that vegan diet is not a fat diet. It's
right.
Something that, you know, it's already been there for years. It's just, you know, people don't really want to face it. People are so busy, and, you know, they might not, they hear, you know, this message about veganism, and they might not be able to, you know, kind of like spend the time and kind of like think about it. So, you know, our purpose to be there, you know, as a restaurant is to just kind of give them a reminder that, you know, these foods are really good for you and they're delicious, and, you know, it's sort of like an incentive for them to even to go a little further to think about, you know, what veganism is all about. So I mean, after we have opened for the Uptown location for almost over 4 years, it's actually 4.5 years now,
right?
And we do feel that people are lot more open to the to come into the restaurant, and, you know, I mean, they just like the food. I mean, it doesn't really matter if it's vegan or not, you know. I mean, it's good food. And once they kind of break down that barrier that,
right,
they think that vegan food is like, oh yeah,
right.
So, you know, they will kind of like, you know, look into, you know, what veganism is all about.
Hey, and by the way, Peter, you're very humble. You and Eric are both very humble. The food is great. The lines are long, and there's a very mixed crowd in there. This is a businessman, businesswoman, young people, older people. I've seen rock stars in there. I've seen celebrities in there, and everyone is. It's a very democratized location. Everyone is treated and loved the same, and enjoys the food just as much. We're down to the last minute or so. Talk a little bit, two things, Peter. Talk a little bit about opening your second location, where that is, and then the future of Peace Food, and then we're going to have to sign off for today.
Okay, well, the second location is on 11th Street, East 11th Street between Broadway and University Place.
Right.
And actually, you know, the reason why we actually didn't really pick that location, but I have a little story to tell.
Go on.
Basically, I turned vegetarian on September 11th, 2001.
Oh.
And I was standing at that corner, and I had a view of the World Trade Tower coming down.
I never heard this.
I turned vegetarian that day because I do not want to contribute to more sufferings, to more, like, loss of life. So there, again, you know, not just to the human, but also to the animal. So
that's a great story.
It's sort of like we didn't even know, but, you know, when we look for the second location,
yeah,
we just found this, you know, on the website, and then we went over there, and it was like, you know, on East 11th Street.
And yeah,
that's, you know, it's a familiar spot. So we didn't even look at any other space, and then, you know, we just kind of signed the lease. I mean, the second time was a lot easier because, you know, we already had, you know, some reputation on the establishments.
Right.
You know, we got the space right away. So under probably 6-7 months of, like, construction. And then we opened the door in March, you know, 2012.
Wow.
I mean, 2013, I'm sorry. Yeah, this year, yep.
Wonderful. And I know I've been there many times. We celebrated my 50th birthday there. For our listeners out there, you should go and enjoy Peter and Eric's two great restaurants, Peace Foods Cafe, uptown and downtown now. It's www.peacefoodcafe.com. Peace does begin on your plate. Peter Liu, you are a visionary leader in the vegan food revolution and truly living proof that green is good. Welcome back to Green is Good, and we're so excited to have with us today the future leaders of the United States of America from the Girl Up organization, Rachel Wisthoff and Rebecca Rolvolcaba. Welcome to Green is Good.
Hi, John. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming on today. You know, Rachel, you're the Girl Up Grassroots Associate in Washington, D.C. for this amazing organization called Girl Up. And Rebecca, you're the Southern California Girl Up Club president. And for our listeners out there that want to follow along with our what we're talking about as we share the story of Girl Up, you could go to www.girlup.org. Rachel and Rebecca, before we get into talking about this truly amazing organization, Girl Up, can you please share your journeys a little bit first? How you got, you know, what were you doing before you got involved and why you got involved with this, you know, great UN organization? Rachel, why don't you go first?
Certainly. Thanks, John. Yes, so I discovered Girl Up actually when I was volunteering abroad. I was both teaching at a university and working with a local NGO on women's and girls' health issues. And so I stumbled upon Girl Up and applied for an internship, really believing in the power of youth and their ability to make change. And I stepped right into the role and started working with all of our amazing Girl Up youth supporters, including clubs. And then in June, I got hired on full-time, so I've been able to continue with this experience.
And Rebecca, how about you? How did you become the Southern California Girl Up Club president?
Well, actually, I got involved my freshman year of high school, and my friends started the Girl Up Club at my local high school. I really wanted to get involved. I thought it was a great organization. So I became a club member. I applied to be a VP last year, a vice president. And this year they decided to have me co-president with my friend. So now we're the two presidents of my club at my high school.
That's great. And so why don't we start with what's going on and what is really Girl Up, so our listeners really get a great understanding. For our listeners out there, again, it's just a gorgeous and really well-done website. It's www.girlup.org. Rachel, why don't you start with what Girl Up is and what your mission is?
Girl Up is a innovative campaign, and we were created by the United Nations Foundation about 3 years ago, and our real mission is to address the needs of adolescent girls in developing countries, those hardest to reach girls. And to do this, where we empower youth in the United States to raise awareness and raise funds for programs of the United Nations so that through their support, we are able to positively empower and impact the girls in the Global South.
Okay. And so when you say positively impact, so there's other young women like you and Rebecca that raise money here in the United States, and then you give money or donate money to adolescents in need around the world?
Yes, yes. So all of the donations that we collect are actually funneled through UN agencies and programs that have tremendous expertise and cultural awareness within the four countries we operate in. Currently, Girl Up supports programs in Liberia, Guatemala, Ethiopia, and Malawi, with hopefully more to come. So that you know that all of your donations and support are going to the best possible programs.
That's great. And Rebecca, why don't you share with our listeners, how does this work? We raise money here in the United States, and then you help these young ladies in these countries that Rachel just said. What does it mean helping them, and what does that help look like, and how far does the dollar go?
Well, Girl Up helps adolescent girls by, you know, girls here in the U.S. raising awareness and funds for United Nations programs that go back and give these girls the opportunities that they need to reach their full potential. So, you know, programs, they can go to help girls become educated, healthy, safe, talented, and positioned to be a leader in their community. So this, the funds raised are really, they go a long way for these girls. They change their lives.
Let's talk a little bit about most of the young women that you're helping are women that, young ladies that are not having opportunities that we're so used to and somewhat take for granted here in America. Is that not correct? Such as some of them have been made child brides at very young ages, or some of them aren't giving equal education opportunities like boys are given or like you're given here in the United States. And they've been typically marginalized in the countries that we're talking about. Is that not correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And so the money that you're getting to them through Girl Up is helping them get educated and break the shackles that they've been held back with historically.
Yeah, the funds, they go to help girls become educated, healthy, safe, counted, and positioned to be leaders.
Rachel, what are these issues? Speak more specifically, better than I'm doing, actually. What are the issues that these young women are facing around the world that we don't get to see via the media every day in America, but they're real problems, it's really not right, and Girl Up is trying to remedy these problems with the great mission that you have right now?
Yeah, certainly, I can speak to that. So oftentimes there are social and cultural norms within these communities that limit girls' chances to be able to access educational opportunities or to be able to speak freely about their health. Oftentimes girls don't have safe spaces in which they can go and access a female mentor or leader in their community to really talk about the discrimination and the gender inequality they face. You know, girls are less likely to make the jump from primary to secondary school. The number one leading cause of death for girls in the developing world between the ages of 15 and 19 are complications due to pregnancy. So just statistics are out there that prove that girls face enormous challenges, but that they're not always heard in the media. You don't often hear that a girl in some of these countries is forced to spend 4 to 6 hours a day just going to get water for their families. They're often expected to help with household chores and take care of younger siblings, which prevents them from going to school and really, you know, advancing their career and advancing their education.
Rebecca, last year, Girl Up was involved with a movie that came out that really told the story that Rachel was just sharing with us about the young ladies across the world. Can you share a little bit about what that movie was and what it meant to you and the other young girls and young ladies involved with Girl Up?
Yes, of course. The movie that Girl Up was involved with last year was called Girl Rising. And it is a global movement for girls' education. It featured girls from developing countries that went through cultural problems and problems with their families. But they got through all of that. They rose to the top. And it really impacted my club after seeing the movie because it really opened our eyes to what girls face in developing countries and seeing it like firsthand on the movie screen. So it is a really amazing movie.
That is just so great. You know, I know that Girl Up is part of the UN Foundation and there's numerous organizations, But one of the funding agents of the UN Foundation was Ted Turner, and he has also taken on huge environmental issues, and he's done so, and he's made so many great and inspired so many people to make so many great changes here in the United States and around the world. Can you talk a little bit about, Rachel, how Girl Up is actually not only doing the great mission that you're doing, but also being getting green along the way and inspiring your young women leaders to be green and to act environmentally?
Yes. We're very excited about this partnership. So we decided girls have a tremendous potential to fundraise, to create donation drives, and what better way to raise money than to donate gently used electronics, everything from cell phones to tablets, to really, you know, bring money back to girls in the developing world. So Girl Up was fortunate enough to partner with Electronic Recyclers International, or ERI, to create the system by which Girl Up clubs, which are girl supporters scattered throughout the U.S. and overseas, collect these cell phones, these tablets, to then turn in, and then these electronic devices are cleaned, the data is wiped, and they're recycled, and then money and proceeds come back to Girl Up. So it's a tremendous partnership.
So instead of Girl Up representatives, you know, doing bake sales or traditional fundraising methodologies, you're saying, give us your old cell phone or tablet. We'll take care of a problem that you have anyway, where to get rid of that stuff responsibly, and we'll turn it into a donation for Girl Up, which will then have a domino effect of helping young girls around the world become empowered.
Exactly. It's a win-win. You're saving the earth, and you're helping to support these girls. So there really is no, you know, downside to this.
Wow, that is just and how can our listeners find this program if they want to be involved or donate their old devices to help Girl Up's mission?
So currently on our website, we have a link to the Buyback Tech website, which
right.
is girlup.buybacktech.com.
Right.
And that website is extremely easy to use. All you do is you go on, you select what device you'd like to donate, and from there it'll give you steps on how to mail it in. And we have also a blog post up on our website that details the whole process so that you have, you know, a clear sense of what you're doing.
That is great. And, you know, we talked at the top of the show, Rebecca, that you're the president of the Southern California Girl Up Club. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit more what do clubs mean and how many Girl Up clubs mean and how many clubs are there in the United States?
Well, Girl Up clubs are clubs that extend the mission of Girl Up within their local communities.
Right.
So the main goals for Girl Up clubs are to just spread the word, fundraise for the UN programs, and advocate for change. There are Girl Up clubs all across the country, and now there are even some internationally around the world. And I know in Southern California, we have around 40 clubs running.
Wow.
And I mean, I'm not sure how much are in the United States.
Right.
Rachel, would you?
We have nearly 450 worldwide.
Wow.
And yeah, it's incredible to see the way they've taken off, and they really support one another through regional coalitions. So clubs in New York will get together, exchange ideas, and really build each other up so that you can do joint fundraisers like the ARI recycling drive or bake sales, that sort of thing.
And what other fundraising methodologies does Girl Up use to do your great mission and your great work?
So Girl Up actually has a lot of different fundraising mechanisms. One of the things that we like to take advantage of is that our youth supporters are constantly on their phones. So we have partnered with a couple of apps to help raise funds for Girl Up, including Charity Miles, where you select Girl Up as your charity, and then every time you run, bike, or walk, you're able to raise money through your miles. And then also donate a photo, which every day you'll upload a photo and a dollar. One photo equals $1, and that dollar will go towards a girl's education in Liberia. And Rebecca, you have a lot more ideas to share.
Yeah, so fundraisers that my club has done are You know, we've done something as simple as a bake sale at our school. We've partnered with Threads of Hope online, and we sold bracelets that were handmade in the Philippines. And half of the profits made went back towards Girl Up, and half of it went towards helping families in the Philippines.
Wow.
So that was a really great fundraiser. We've also done some restaurant fundraisers where 25% of the profits in the restaurant went towards Girl Up. So those have been a few of the good fundraisers we've done.
Rachel and Rebecca, you know, we're going back to your Going Green campaign with ERI and Buyback Tech. What kind of electronics does Girl Up accept so that way they can get good donations that they could use? You could use to further your mission?
Some electronics that the Buyback Tech website does accept are iPods, smartphones, and tablets. So the smartphones could be like a Samsung, iPhone, BlackBerry, and then the tablets are like the Amazon tablet, the iPad. So it's like if you want to upgrade to the new iPhone 5S, you could give up your old iPhone 4 and donate it and help a girl in need.
I love it. And what's the future look like? What's the, you know, Rachel, you got involved recently with Girl Up in terms of the home office back in D.C. What's the pipeline look like for Girl Up, and what are some new initiatives that you're working on with all the young leaders around the nation like Rebecca?
Yeah, I'm happy you asked, John. So we are actually thrilled to be supporting a new piece of legislation that was introduced in the House of Representatives. It's called the Girls Count Act of 2013, and it's a bipartisan bill. And what it really seeks to do is make sure that the State Department and that the U.S. aid agency prioritize a registry system for girls in developing countries. So oftentimes, girls will not have birth certificates or records, which prevents them from enrolling in school, from getting a loan at a bank, from owning property or being able to vote. All of these fundamental parts of their lives are denied simply because there's no piece of paper recording their birth. So we are asking all of our Girl Up clubs and supporters to contact their member of Congress to support this bill. And we're hoping it will be introduced in the Senate sometime next year. It's really an exciting time in Girl Up's history.
Nice.
And we're also just looking to expand globally. Each year we'll get increasingly more clubs in different countries around the world, and being able to connect those clubs to each other so that, you know, Rebecca's club in Southern California can talk with a Girl Up club in South Africa. That's what we're really looking to do, because we want to make sure that that pathway of communication towards supporting girls is clear and ever present.
That is just so great, Rebecca. How is this leadership role that you've taken with Girl Up and your involvement with Girl Up all changed your life for the better? How has it made you more aware?
You know, it has really just made me more aware by opening my eyes and like just showing me what girls face in developing countries, and it made me feel like, oh my goodness, girls are not going to school. But here in the U.S., you know, we have to go to school. It is like a priority.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel so great to know that I'm involved with Girl Up, helping girls in need. It was really awesome when I first got involved.
That's great. And how long is this, electronic take back opportunity going to be out there? Is that an ongoing campaign for Girl Up, for our listeners out there to get online and get these electronics back to Girl Up?
Yes. We kind of rolled it out in November, thinking in terms of Black Friday and Cyber Monday. But that being said, we know that after the holidays, people will probably have new electronics and want to recycle their old ones. So this campaign is going on for the foreseeable future. So definitely feel free to donate.
That's great. And we're down to the last minute and a half. I'm going to ask this for both of you to share this question. You know, for other young ladies that want to get involved, other young women, give some advice. Why don't you go first, Rebecca?
Well, get involved with Girl Up. You can just log on to girlup.org, check out the website. It's pretty awesome. You know, you can contact Rachel or Julie up in D.C. You can ask them, you know, if you want to make a Girl Up Club at your school or in your community. You can sign up, and they'll send you a starting up gift packet, and it'll be awesome. You'll be, like, right on there. You'll have a wonderful leadership opportunity to take hold of your club, collect members, collect funds, and it's great. And participate every week in the club update, and you'll be on track.
That's awesome. For our listeners out there, please go to www.girlup.org. Donate your electronics. Get money back to Girl Up and let them continue their amazing mission. Rachel Wistoff and Rebecca Rovalcaba, you are both amazing ambassadors for all the girls in the world and truly living proof that green is good.